Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
Welcome to Hagman. This is the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. Our websites, HagmanReportLive.com, and hopefully that's where you're listening or viewing this from, HagmanReportLive.com, video and audio assets there, and HagmanReport.com there for the print side of things, show prep and such. Also for coffee, the best coffee, I believe, HagmanStore.com. It's HagmanStore.com for gourmet coffee, detective's choice, and the roaster. Tweak it just a tad, and I will tell you right now, I am drinking it as we speak, and it is even finer than before. Oh, it is. It's just, I can't even describe it. It's fantastic. HagmanStore.com. Visit there as well. I've got a great show lined up for you. Peter Barry Chalka on right now with me. Before I turn it over to Peter, or we start the show with Peter, I just have something to say at the open. You know, early this morning, I was, walking my dog, and, you know, I was thinking about this program. I was thinking about just the landscape of the world in which we find ourselves living today. Americans and people all over the world, they've lost confidence in their governments and the media. And this is nothing new. And even the alternative media, as well as the institutional media, there's a crisis of confidence, in my view, all across the world. And I looked at my dog and I'm thinking, you know, who do you trust? I mean, who can you, who is the people tuning into this broadcast, who do you trust? Who can you trust? Now, I look at my dog and true unconditional love and loyalty with my dog. Okay. And that's kind of, in a sense, isn't that what you're looking for? Not the loyalty portion, but the truth portion when you tune into a program. And we've lost that confidence because a lot of times it's difficult to distinguish misinformation from accurate information. And this could have innocuous origins. People try to rush out there to be first with the information, getting it wrong many times. The desire to be first with information, that's a problem. And speculation over facts. Speculation as facts, not good to do. So what are people looking for in today's world? What are you looking for by tuning into this program? You're looking for honest assessment, truth. You know, aside from the basic needs, of course, that we all need, people are searching for the truth. And after all, the Bible does state that the truth shall set you free. And given the age of disinformation and misinformation in which we live, you know, we have to really be careful of things. Now, that said, Peter Barry Chalka, he is an investigative journalist, award-winning. I'll tell you what, I would give him a Pulitzer Prize if I had a Pulitzer on my credenza. I don't. But that said, Peter Barry Chalka is with me, peter.media. That's his website. He writes for American Thinker, as well as the Hagman Report. And of course, he's my guest right now. Peter, thanks for joining me today.
Well, thanks for having me, Doug. And this is a really interesting day today because it's the tail end of a really intense four-day period of investigative journalism on a very deep level. And, of course, you've been a major part of it, the story that we'll be talking about in the first part of this hour. And I wanted just to add something to your opening comments, and that is that in addition to the things you mentioned, the limitations and the trust issues, something that we face as broadcasters and journalists is the increasing censorship. When I come on this program now or on any program that I'm invited on electronically, television or radio, I have to think very, very carefully, even more carefully than before, about what I'm saying, because of the heavy weight of the media, the big tech, I should say, coming down on us, censoring Twitter, Facebook, Google, YouTube. And we've all experienced this, and it's picked up the pace lately, so that even when you think you haven't violated their insane terms of use or whatever, they still come after you and maybe silence you if you're that unlucky. So we're self-censoring now to a degree that I've never had to do before in 50 years of doing this kind of work. And I think people need to really keep that in mind, and hopefully that we can make some changes in that. We'll probably have to wait until after November, but it has got to be changed, because the media, in my opinion, has been the biggest problem leading to the conditions that we face in the United States today, because the mainstream media has totally failed us, and now the alternative or new media is being largely, if not totally, suppressed and censored. For example, American Thinker. There's an article at American Thinker, a 17-year-old publication, which is generally pretty well respected. It's no longer being indexed by Google. So if you search a particular topic and American Thinker has done articles on it, they will not show up. Facebook is censoring American Thinker. Yesterday, my article was retweeted by Michelle Malkin, who has 2.2 million followers, and I got a lot of action, a lot of retweets, and the editor, publisher of American Thinker told me that because he can keep a close eye on the metrics where the hits are coming from to American Thinker, he said, nothing came from Twitter yesterday. So they're blocking tweets to American Thinker. American Thinker has now been essentially blacklisted, even though it's a responsible publication with standards. But they pretty much delisted Breitbart. Breitbart.com is claiming that 99% of their traffic from search engines is now gone. So they've done this to others. They've done it. They started with Alex Jones, and now they're reaching out to anybody who's left standing. But so just to review what I've been writing about and what you've been investigating, and what I've been quoting you on in two of my major articles, it was last Friday morning. That's a little over 4 days ago now, as we sit here on Tuesday, that we got the word that Millicent Millie Weaver, widely known as Millennial Millie, the crusading investigative conservative journalist who has contributed to InfoWars for many years, and she's out on her own now, in addition to still being a contractor for InfoWars, where she does television, internet television, and print reporting at InfoWars.com. But she's out on her own on Millennial Millie. And we got the word early Friday afternoon that she had been arrested at her home in northeastern Ohio. And, of course, that would have been shocking and bad enough. And she happened to be live streaming the moment when the arrest came down. And that very quickly went viral online. And you had the foresight to upload a brief, about 2-minute video alerting your followers to this turn of events at a very early point. And, of course, that led to a breakthrough in our understanding and everyone's understanding of what happened in this bizarre case. Now, it was made more bizarre. I mean, she was arrested, actually, along with her a man who is described, he was described initially as possibly her husband or certainly her boyfriend. And we still haven't confirmed if they're married or not, but he is the father of her two young children, of their two young children, ages 4 and 9 months, and they've been together for almost a decade. So they are a couple, definitely, significant others to each other. And a third person arrested was Millie's younger brother, although that didn't come out until yesterday when they finally had a court appearance. But so the three of them were taken away and jailed for the weekend because there couldn't be a bail hearing in court. The earliest time that could happen was Monday or yesterday. So they had to sit in this terrible, corrupt prison in that county of
Porter's County in Ravenna, Ohio.
Right, right. And when I started researching that aspect, I found that the FBI was investigating that jail. The media was investigating their complaints of all kinds of horrible things that have gone on there. So, you know, it was just terrible to imagine what they were going through. Now, the crimes that they were arrested for derived from a secret grand jury indictment. Now, that sounded insidious, but it turns out that grand jury indictments are secret until the person arrested is actually charged. So that was really nothing out of the ordinary. It wasn't particularly nefarious.
Right.
And basically, with the mainstream media had limited interest in this. Of course, the new media had much more interest in it. And I have been devoting the last 4 days to it almost around the clock. And having written now 3 articles in American Thinker, the original reports were that charges included burglary or destruction and destruction of evidence. And there were one or two others. There were 3 felonies and 1 misdemeanor, but it was unclear what this related to. But I mentioned the video that you had uploaded at Hagman Report. HagmanReportLive.com, right. And it also was at YouTube, and I think it's gotten 30 or 40,000 views since Friday. But among the viewers was the mother of Millie Weaver in California, apparently. So presumably she follows the Hagman Report, and she was critical in the charges that were leveled against her daughter and the other 2 individuals, which derived from a kind of family squabble back in April, so almost 4 months ago, when the mother in this case was visiting Millie in her house with the other 2 people there, the 2 men, and they had a family argument. And the clearest insight we got into that was when the police report was finally released yesterday. But all weekend we were wondering what happened. But the real fabulous occurrence in this was that she left a long comment on YouTube, a reader's comment to your video, saying exactly or pretty much close to what happened back in April, that yes, there was an event. It was really a nothing burger, and she did not want to pursue any charges, and she didn't understand how this could have led to the indictment of her daughter and her 2, and I guess her son, is if it's Millie's brother, right? And Millie's boyfriend and father of her children. So you and I and some others spent the weekend and actually right up to today trying to unravel the story and get it straight. And I should say, I don't know how many others actually spent the time really trying to do the proper investigative work, because a number of people, mainly on the new media conservative side of the fence, ran off and all but jumped off the cliff, in my opinion. Oh, because I should add, another key information point here is that, of course, Millie Weaver was very close to releasing online a documentary film that she had been working on for quite some time, which was meant to kind of be a major contribution to the public's understanding of the deep state and, as she termed it, Shadowgate. You know, this really nefarious group of individuals, players, administrators, spooks who've got us under their thumb and have gone after President Trump with false charges and have wiretapped him and are basically surveilling everyone now. And there are 2 whistleblowers, people describe as whistleblowers, in her film who provide the first person commentary or evidence on that. And so, of course, one wondered, is she being sent to jail and prosecuted in order to prevent the release of this incendiary documentary? Well, of course, it wasn't prevented because one of her associates was able to upload it to YouTube where it got 1.3 million views in the next about 36 hours before it was finally censored and taken off of YouTube. But by then, individuals had copied it and uploaded it all over the place, including to hosts, video hosts that are beyond censorship. They're not into censoring, like BitChute, for example.
Banned video, for example. That's right.
Right. Banned video.
Yeah. And I'm going to point out, just for people just tuning in or listening to this, this to me is an intensely personal situation with respect to Millie Weaver and her family. And I've got the utmost respect for Millie. And I just want to let people know that, there are different angles to this story that are relevant to the larger picture here, which is why we're addressing this now. Mm-hmm. This is not to, because believe me, it's not something, Peter, because I've been involved in situations where something would happen, and because I'm a higher profile person than average, people will say, "Oh, it happened because he did this or did that," and no, that's not the truth. And then what happens is you try to explain your personal life or certain aspects of your personal life. It's not embarrassing. It's just not appropriate. That's the only thing. So, but there's a bigger aspect, and you're getting to this, but I just want people to know that this is not a voyeuristic attempt to, get into, because, yeah. I personally think a lot of her and her family, and God bless them. So I just wanted to just toss it in there. Go ahead and continue.
Absolutely. And, I would add to that this is not, we're not looking for the sensational aspects of the story, the personal family aspects. They are relevant to some degree, but this is a big, big story, and it's not over yet. And of course, the bottom line in the big story is her documentary, which both you and I have had a chance to watch. I've only had a chance to watch it once, and I reviewed it in one short paragraph in my first article at American Thinker, and I highly recommend that documentary. It's 82 minutes long. It's very dense and very full of information. Much of it, if not most of it, ultimately open source, but it is brought together in a very novel way, including with the input of these two quote-unquote whistleblowers. But even aside from their role in this, because they are interviewed on screen by Millie, it's an outstanding contribution to the video documentation of the times we are living through. And it's pretty easy to find. I will, of course, linking to it in my show notes today, which can be found at HagmanReport.com. Just look for Peter's show notes, August 18th. And if you're listening to or watching a podcast of this program at some future date, it probably will still be there. So if you search those terms, Peter's show notes, HagmanReport.com, August 18th, 2020, it should still be there, all the relevant URLs from today. But that one is really worth looking at. And, the intensity that I put into reporting on this case over the weekend, and this has happened to me before, of course, as a journalist, because many stories involve people. So you get involved, whether you wanted to or not, whether you thought you would or not, in their lives. And in this case, I had a reference point to Millie Weaver's work. I've checked her out from time to time, but, I wasn't an intense follower of her work, but everything I saw of hers when she was active with InfoWars and then more recently on her own, where she went into the field, into Antifa riots and interviewed people and made some very good points about people being bussed in to these riots and demonstrations. And I thought, she's a courageous young lady. I've always had a very good feeling about her work professionally. And, of course, she's very articulate and she's a very attractive young woman. So she presents a very strong and compelling and charismatic package. So, your heart went out to her when the more you realized what she was probably being subjected to. And in fact, one of her associates, one of the whistleblowers from the film, had a video phone conversation with Millie on Sunday, I believe it was, from jail, which lasted 15 minutes. And, you know, if you watch that, you get a sense of how terrible it is to be incarcerated when you really don't deserve it. And meanwhile, in the United States now, especially in the Democrat cities, we have the Democrat mayors and whomever they're running the show releasing rapists, murderers in some cases, hardened criminals from incarceration, allegedly because of the COVID-19 pandemic and the conditions in jails. And as Milley in this conversation, which I'm also linking to, describes just what it's like, the towels they give you, the lack of soap, the dirty sheets that haven't been laundered. It's disgusting. And, you know, this makes one interested in prison reform. I mean, I don't think anybody should be subjected to that if they're locked up, you know, no matter what they've done.
And meanwhile, you know, you've got, I don't want to interrupt, but meanwhile, you've got people out there going in and, you know, smashing Walgreens, taking merchandise out. And the prosecution in places like Portland or Seattle saying, we're not going to prosecute. You know, so this selective prosecution by the prosecutors themselves is very noteworthy. Go ahead.
So I did three articles on this, which were published Saturday, Monday, and today at American Thinker. That is August 15th, 17th, and 18th, 2020. And I believe I quoted you in the first one, didn't I, Doug?
It was one of them. First or second?
Well, the second one, the one from yesterday, Monday, you got the lion's share of quotes.
That's right.
400 words worth, but that's because it was the core of, you know, you and I concluded pretty much independently, you with your expertise as a licensed investigator with decades of experience, and me reading the tea leaves through my research and my experience as an investigative journalist. And we pretty much concluded the same thing, that if I can summarize it, that yes, there certainly is a possibility here that Milley and her colleagues were indicted, arrested, and now they're going to be prosecuted with at least part of the reason being who she is and what she does. I mean, I wouldn't rule out that possibility for a moment, because the county where this all took place is, my understanding, a Democrat-controlled county. And I don't think it would take someone from on high in the deep state or the National Democratic Party to say, hey, take this woman, you know, off the playing field. I think it's just kind of an organic process. And I've had experience with small communities, rural in some cases, where, you know, we used to have a word for it, like the townies run the town. You know, they rise to the level of the mayors and police chiefs in these little towns, but they really groove on it. They really enjoy the power, even in that small circle. And in this case, as arose yesterday, the behavior allegedly of Milley and her two colleagues, who were later prosecuted, on the day they were interrogated back in April when all of this initial event went down, displeased the police who came out to investigate. And, you know, they may have had a chip on their shoulder and a grudge. And so, you know, why not indict her? So that's my opinion of it at this point. But I'm also finding out through deep research some other aspects, which one of which in particular is very disturbing, but I'm not really ready to go there yet. And I hope I'll be able to also write about it at American Thinker, and hopefully too without libeling anyone who I might want to be writing about. But it's, you know, it's almost this incident itself, this case itself, even to this point, okay, the case of Millennial Milley and her arrest and her documentary, would actually make an interesting e-book or a small book, but just the way we went at it, trying to peel back the layers of the onion, so to speak, and really get a proper, factual, truthful handle on what was going on with it, rather than instantly jump to conclusions as some people did, especially on podcasts, and said, well, this is clearly the hand of the deep state at work, and, you know, they might kill her. And I mean, all kinds of predictions and certainties that not only didn't hold water, but they've been declining in veracity and truth as the hours go on here and more information comes out. But we don't really need to dwell on that now. And I think, you know, as we always say here, we always ask for prayers for those who need and deserve them. I would say, if you are a prayerful person listening to or watching this broadcast now, please include Millie Weaver and her boyfriend and her brother in your prayers. Yeah, and her children, absolutely. Of course, too. My understanding was they were put into Child Protective Services custody over the weekend while her parents are in jail. But I'm pretty sure they got custody of them yesterday, Monday. But, you know, she has a lawyer now. They're going to have to go through this. I mean, perhaps there'll be a plea deal, but it's you know, she certainly doesn't need this.
And Peter, this is based on a situation where, you know, again, all families go through crap. And mom, if we were to believe, stipulate which you said is true, you know, it originated from really nothing, and mom's saying, look, just, it's nothing, relax. It's within the family. We got this handled. We don't need your, meaning the police or
intervention.
Exactly.
This crude,
right,
brutal intervention where it's not only not needed because the parties that were involved, the family, they've all made up. You know, they're on a good terms again now. So what is the point here? That technically maybe some kind of crime was committed, but look at all the other crimes that are being committed right in front of our eyes that we can see on TV every day, and people aren't even being arrested.
And that's, to me, that's the sinful nature of this. That really hurts my heart because, you know, as in my capacity as an investigator, when I look at what's going on all across America and I see the injustices, Peter, it hurts my heart. I mean, that brutal film that we showed yesterday on this program of that man, and it just made me so angry, of getting just beat and hurt very seriously. And yet there's no justice. Who speaks on behalf of that victim? Anyway.
Millie put her life on the line to do this work. It's no vacation to do the kind of work she was doing. You know, you're really going to be ready to take the blows.
That's right.
And this is a big one, and obviously undeserving, in my opinion. I think I'm going to hold until my next appearance these two videos I wanted to show because the time is getting away from us already. But
I just want to say one thing before you move on. Folks, the amount of information that Peter has done that he's not talking about that I've seen. I think I sent him an email yesterday. Look, I'll give you my badge because, hey, you know, you talk about some good stuff, research investigation. And I want to thank you for that. And I want to thank you.
Well, maybe you could start minting, honorary Hagman Report, badges. And I will gladly accept the first annual Hagman Report Award for investigative journalism, if you want to.
Oh, yeah. You deserve it. Let me tell you, you deserve it. Folks, I mean, it's incredible. I've never seen the level of detail, granular detail, than Peter gives. All right.
Well, I made a breakthrough yesterday. I found out the real name, the full name of one of the principals in this story, and that opened a Pandora's box of information and insight, which we will get to on another occasion. It has to be carefully addressed, which is why I say this is a really interesting story that is not over yet. I don't think we're even to the halfway point, but I want to kind of rush ahead because we are this week, tonight, tomorrow, and Thursday are going to be the next three nights. Last night was the opening night of the Democrat National Convention. And this was of course, an anomalous presentation in the history of political conventions because it was totally virtual. It was produced almost entirely in advance, like a big infomercial with probably thousands of parts, I mean, hundreds of segments, and I would say thousands of edits. And it was, of course, very painful to watch if you're a God-fearing, patriotic American who supports President Trump. But I had it on several monitors while I was multitasking so I could kind of take it in without torturing myself and collapsing in a heap. But of course, it was pointed out that Michelle Obama, who was the star of last night's convention, it was most of the media covered it only for an hour, some for 2 hours. The program actually was 2 hours of canned video with basically no audience. And it was heavy on combating racial inequality, presenting the United States as a racist country, an unfair country, and of course, focusing mainly on President Trump as an absolutely horrible individual who is leading us into an autocracy or an authoritarian government. And in the words of Beto O'Rourke, Robert Francis O'Rourke, who spoke, he said he's the greatest, or not the greatest, but the worst racist who's ever been a president of the United States. So it was that kind of big lie. It was the big lie from one end to the other. Now, when it got to Michelle Obama, isn't she lovely? Who is, of course, very hard to take, in my opinion. Turns out that her presentation, scripted, delivered with a teleprompter, was recorded more than a week ago. So she was unable to mention what everyone thought she would, namely the accession to the vice presidential nomination of Kamala Harris. I mean, how in the world would Michelle Obama, the star of last night, not refer to that when Kamala is right now the first person of color, the first woman of color to be nominated for vice president, and if she's elected, will be the first woman of color president, because clearly she will take over at some point in the first term or in the term of Joe Biden for the failing Joe Biden. So that was one oddity. And actually, the convention is getting mixed reviews, even from the usual liberal elite. And I just hope that the Republicans are watching, because their convention starts next week. And I hope they don't make the same mistakes. It was interesting to me that Michelle mentioned six or eight times the word struggle, which she has a hard time pronouncing. And I will not try to mimic how she pronounces the word struggle. But this is a favorite word of the leftists, especially of the communist type, because it was a favorite word of, guess who, Chairman Mao Tse-tung. In fact, he came up with this slogan in the 60s, which was popular here in the 60s among radical leftists, like the Weather Underground. And when they would march violently or otherwise, they would chant, "Dare to struggle, dare to win." And those were the words of Chairman Mao. And of course, these leftists, they're always struggling. They're struggling against this, against that. And therefore, this is a horrible country because they just have to keep struggling to transform it to the communist utopia. By the way, in addition to my own articles at American Thinker, I did not want to fail to mention this article that is the lead feature article today at American Thinker. That is Tuesday, August 18th, 2020. It's by Jack Cashel, who was a guest of yours in studio recently, right, Doug?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I just spoke with him, and he'll be coming back. Hopefully I'll be seeing him this weekend as well. So
this is a great article. It's titled Obama, quote, "I make love to men daily."
Yeah, that caught my attention.
And here's the subtitle. "What Obama told his long-ago girlfriend, comma, wrote in his college poetry, comma, and was repeated by a participant claiming an all-night sex romp speaks volumes." Now, of course, Jack Cashel has a book on Obama. So
Obama.
Perfect timing. He's done a lot of research, and this is a really well-written article. I mean, it's just so enjoyable to read it, plus the content, and I can't recommend that highly enough. Obama, "I Make Love to Men Daily" at American Thinker Today by Jack Cashel, and it will be on the front page of American Thinker for at least the next 10 or 12 days as it moves down the line there. But also, if you search it, I'm sure you can find it pretty easily. Oh, I wanted to mention this about Joe Biden, the Democrat nominee. Of course, he's hiding out in his basement still, giving very select, can't really call them interviews, they're puffball conversations. Well, I guess yesterday he did one with Cardi B, and she is a very popular, successful hip-hop rapper. And I first heard of her when she popped up on a Jimmy Kimmel show about 2 years ago, and I happened to see the program. I don't normally watch it. And I thought, who is this person? She was speaking with, I mean, she got a standing ovation when she walked out, so I knew she was big. I'd never heard of her. And she was speaking with a Spanish accent, some kind of weird Spanish accent. Turns out she was born in Brooklyn and has lived all of her life in the United States, but I guess this is a cool way to be if you want to appeal to the demographic that buys hip-hop and rap in this country now. And as we speak, she has the number one best-selling song on whatever the charts are, Billboard, I don't know who keeps them now, and I guess they're downloads. But this song is an acronym, which is called a WAP. And it's so obscene what this acronym means that, of course, I can't repeat it. And if you are really interested, consumer, viewer, listener warning here, strong language, you can find it if you search like Urban Dictionary, what is WAP mean, and it's absolutely disgusting. This quote song of hers is described as the single most obscene piece of music ever to make the popular music charts in the United States going back to the very beginning. So this is who Joe Biden gives an interview with. And it reminds me of the reign of Obama for 8 years when it would have these glitzy events at the White House in the East Room, you know, an evening of great performances with, and 9 out of 10 usually would be people of color who rapped. So another reason I think twice about voting for Joe Biden, because your culture is going to go headlong into the abyss even faster.
Chris Wallace doesn't feel that way. Chris Wall, but anyway.
You know, I agree with Trump, who really blasted Fox News the other day. Now, there's a lot of really good stuff on Fox News, so I'm not putting them down wholesale. But, I mean, this week they have a lot of Juan Williams, Donna Brazile, Chris Wallace, and, you know, it really is hard to take. But now, consider this about Kamala Harris. She gave an interview to National Public Radio in June of last year in which she said that she would, she was speaking at the time running for president, if she became president, which she still will if she and Biden win the election in November, she said, I would have no choice but to prosecute Trump after his presidency, because she said she's so convinced that there's evidence there that he should be prosecuted criminally and that his immunity would be gone after he leaves the White House. So she was like chomping at the bit that if she got to the White House, she would be sure that he was prosecuted to the full extent of their colored law, no pun intended, if she got in there. By the way, I forget if I mentioned this last time. You know, her history is interesting, and Dinesh D'Souza pointed this out in some tweets where her, I think it's great-great-great-grandfather on her father's side, who's from Jamaica, owned 200 slaves back in the day. They're actually slave owners. Her forebears owned slaves. Now, isn't that interesting? And Dinesh D'Souza published the actual 1817 record of the slaves, their names, their ages, that were owned by her great-great-great-whatever grandfather. So interesting there. Oh, another really interesting Democrat, interesting puke alert, is Representative Ayanna Pressley. You can always pick her out of a crowd because she has a bald head. And I don't think she's on chemotherapy or anything. This is just how she presents herself. She's one of the squad, the increasing number of squad members, AOC, Ilhan Omar, Talib, Representative Talib. But Representative Ayanna Pressley said on MSNBC last weekend, quote, there needs to be unrest in the streets, end quote. I guess the discussion was the demonstrations, and this is her contribution to that discussion. So sounds like inciting a riot to me, but I don't expect her to be held accountable. I did want to mention this because I don't think I did last Friday. It was a week ago today that I had been invited by the BBC to participate in a discussion of the Chinese cell phone app TikTok. And I prepared for this program, but it was postponed because they decided, or they had to instead do a report on the breaking news of Kamala Harris's nomination for vice president. And it got fouled up in the rescheduling, so it never happened. But I took all my notes and wrote an article on American Thinker, which I would highly recommend. Now, I barely knew what TikTok was before I started the research, but it turns out to be very interesting. And, of course, President Trump, in his crackdown on things bad from Red China, had ordered the company that owns TikTok, which is owned by a Red Chinese company, to cease and desist from doing financial transactions in the United States in 45 days after his executive order, which is about 2 weeks ago now. And, of course, that got him a lot of bad publicity, incredibly, from the mainstream media. But when you delve into the issue, you realize, again, just like he was correct in trying to close the borders to Chinese in the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic, he was right on in this move to shut down TikTok, unless it can be sold to an American company, because it's a spy grid that is harvesting all of the information and then some from everybody's cell phone, I mean everything, and probably sending it off to the Communist Party of China, where they can use it in their massive databases that they're assembling for literally every person on the planet. And TikTok had already been fined once in the United States over $5 million for harvesting data of 13-year-olds and younger, which is completely forbidden by law in the United States. But they did it anyway, and they got a slap on the wrist. And there were some other things in their background, in the background of that company, which is the app, the TikTok app, is a frivolous thing. It had 100 million downloads in the United States on both major platforms, Android and iOS, and for a time, it may still be the number one download of an app for cell phones. And what it does is it allows the user to create a brief, up to 15 seconds maximum length, kind of funny music video type thing. So it's very popular with rappers and hip hop. And I've read that some people who have mastered TikTok can actually make it pay. One person who's an expert TikToker supposedly made $1 million by using this app. Now, how he did it, I don't know. But, you know, I mean, it was interesting for me just to come up to speed on what's going on with this kind of addictive, basically frivolous, useless app, in my opinion. But that's going on. What's going on with it? Moving right along, I wanted to mention this quickly as another insight into the future. There's a college in Michigan that, in order to open up this fall with actual in-person teaching, they are going to have mandatory digital tracking of every student's movements 24/7 using a mobile app that everyone has to download on his or her phone, and it will save constantly the location data, medical records, basically everything. And here's the brief description of how this goes. It says this college, which is Albion College, I think, in Albion, Michigan, will force downloading of an app that tracks location on private health data at all times in a supposed attempt to protect students from the coronavirus. This is one of the first countries in the school to take this route of contact tracing, but others will definitely follow, we know. The school is working to create a COVID bubble on campus, demanding students stay within the school's 4.5-mile perimeter for the entire semester. If a student leaves the campus, the app will notify the administration and the student could be suspended or kicked out. So here we are. This is the new normal. This is the new normal. And I mentioned, I think, on a recent appearance here, I forget if it was Friday or before that, I said New York City has been destroyed. Well, yesterday there was an article in the Daily Mail, and it was published. The essay it was based on was published today at length in the New York Post. I'm linking to it, by an author who was born and bred in New York, an entrepreneur, and he's had to flee New York City, Manhattan, probably permanently because of its totally unlivable state. His name is James Alhrusher, and he's fled to Florida. And this goes along with what that former chief of police under Giuliani, whose name is escaping me at the moment, but he was on Fox News last night, and he said that as he was the chief of police when Giuliani, as mayor for 8 years, basically cleaned up New York and put an end to a tremendous amount of the violent crime there and made it a safe place to live, work, and visit. The former chief of police, he said that as he drives around Manhattan now, he sees most stores boarded up and closed, many of them permanently. The only restaurants open have tables on the sidewalks for outdoor dining. But he said he notices gangs of thugs roaming around unmolested, but who they molest. They will molest anybody they can find on the streets, including people dining at these outdoor restaurants who will be shaken down. And the thugs will say to them, if you don't give us money, we're going to beat you up or steal your cell phone. Some of them do rob them. And no police around. Nobody's held accountable. There's videos of all this, of course, surveillance videos. Nobody's ever tracked down. And this is one reason. It's not the COVID-19. It's this kind of lack of safety, this collapse of the cities in the United States that is forcing people to flee to more rural or suburban areas now. And this is really the wave of the future. In one fell swoop, the communists, the Democrats, the Marxists, the anarchists have achieved with the willingness of most of the American public what they wanted. That is a complete collapse of the American civilization, throwing us into turmoil. People are fleeing the cities, and the only people who will be left there are going to be the desperate, the violent, the criminal, which is what's happening now. And there's hardly any law enforcement. People aren't being prosecuted if they're actually arrested, but most of them by the thousands are not being arrested, and more thousands, tens of thousands, are being released on the streets from jail, allegedly from COVID-19. So if we need any more evidence that the COVID-19 pandemic panic is a psyop, here it is again, but it just breaks one's heart to see this happening, especially I, as someone who grew up within close commuting distance of Manhattan, of New York City. And I've spent a lot of time there as well in recent years, particularly in the decade of the 90s when it was very, very safe, and even more recently. And it's just shocking and heartbreaking to see one of America's most exciting cities just hit the skids. You know, things like Broadway plays, well, it's being reported now they may never reopen. How can they? If we have permanent social distancing, they cannot reopen, but they're not even scheduled to maybe reopen until well into next year. And meanwhile, the casts, the professional people, the directors, they're all gone. They've left because there's no work there. So they're moving in with their parents somewhere on the other coast, maybe, or in the Midwest. So, I mean, literally the core of activity that made New York a world-class city, and not only New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, other big cities, it's going away. And will it ever come back? Well, if you read the essay by this individual I mentioned in the New York Post, his argument is that it's not coming back. It's never coming back. The American experience is coming to an end. And of course, to end on this note, as I often try to, it doesn't have to totally
Peter,
end.
We've got about 10 minutes. So.
Oh.
I know
okay,
that. I know
I'll
that.
Hold it for the last 2 minutes then so I can continue to kvetch.
kvetch,
I do have a more on my list here, but it's... Yeah, the destruction of you're familiar with New York City, aren't you, Doug? You've done work there, or your investigative work in years past. I mean, did you ever imagine in your wildest imaginings that something like this would be happening?
You know, I got to tell you, it was the early part of the 80s. I think it was 1980. It was either 80 or 81. I'm not sure. I was in New York City, you know, in Times Square. Actually a block away from Times Square to be precise when New Year's Eve. Okay. When the ball fell. And, I remember that period of time, and I remember being out, earlier that day and then the following day. And I didn't feel safe at all. I mean, now we're talking, you know, that decade of the 70s in just kind of, this is pre-Giuliani, you know, kind of right. time period. And then I had gone back, it was early 90s, totally different. And then, I worked there 18 months in the mid 2000s cases, you know. So what I watched was this evolution, this bad Death Wish style, roving gangs, graffiti everywhere. It was a mess. You know, and then it got, all of a sudden, things got really, really good. I didn't feel unsafe. I felt safe. You could walk down the street. And then, today we've got the communist mayor of that city who has just undone everything. So yes, it's sad. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I have similar memories. In fact, I took many photographs in the 1970s and 80s, most of which I've unfortunately lost because I was fascinated by the decrepit nature of, in particular, 42nd Street, just south of Times Square, which was lined with theaters and peep shows showing hardcore pornography. And it's where you went if you wanted to buy drugs on the street or find a prostitute or go to one of this triple X rated entertainment shows. And in fact, on one of my laptop computers, I have as a wallpaper a photograph taken during that period in black and white through the windshield of a car that I found online. And it just flashes me back to that period. And indeed, the 1990s was a complete turnaround. I spent months at a time in Manhattan working on some projects there, staying with a friend on the East Side. And I went out and about at all times of the day and night. I never once felt unsafe. And more importantly, an untoward event never happened. I never saw anything weird, nothing threatening or dangerous ever happened to me personally. And now you hear the stories, and they're not exaggerated, from people who, of course, are probably liberals. They're left-wingers, and they're saying, you know, these four or five things happened on my block in the last week, including people trying to break into my apartment building, you know, and they've had it. And I think, you know, according to this writer who wrote the essay in the New York Post, it's worse now than it's ever been. I mean, if we remember what it was like in the bad old days, it's worse now. So and everything is pretty much still closed. The museums are closed. Broadway's closed. The hotels that are still open, many of them have as a majority or exclusively derelicts and bums, homeless people, drug addicts who the city is paying usurious amounts to house these people in the hotels to protect them against COVID-19, and they're trashing the hotels. And how would you like to stay in one of those hotels and your fellow guests there are people shooting up drugs or doing, you know, prostitutes turning tricks? I mean, this is just unthinkable. This is a dystopian reality, which is now exceeding the level of the fictional that fictional movies used to display. And now it's real life in 2020 America.
You know, Peter, the Hartford Current reported that more than 16,000 people from the Upper West, or I'm sure it's from Soho in that area, changed their address to Connecticut. Now, 16,000 from March through June moved from that section of Manhattan to Connecticut, just from that section alone. So,
yeah. And not only residents, but the writer points out in this essay that 90% of the old Time Life building is vacant. Most of the offices and workplaces have not recovered because of the dangers, the threats, and they're happy. The businesses are happy to have their employees continue to work from home, because this is another aspect of this. This pandemic and the shutdowns, the lockdowns, and the fact that people who can are working remotely online, which supposedly is working well for a lot of them. I don't know, but this has thrust us wholesale overnight into the total tech virtual economic environment. I mean, it was going in that direction anyway, but still, you know, millions of people literally, I think, went into Manhattan every day to work. That fell off to near zero during the height of the pandemic, and it's hardly recovered at all. It may be 10% or less now. And again, it's never going to recover. I mean, the businesses now are realizing, hey, we don't have to pay these rents on a huge high rise. You know, our staff can work from their bedroom or their basement, and we can still pay them the same or less because they don't have to commute or whatever. And, you know, it's more of, I mean, Barack Hussein Obama promised us in 2008 that he was going to transform America. And we can see his fingerprints over a lot of this, if not directly, certainly indirectly, and even in people like Fauci. Fauci, who's been responsible for so much of this nonsense single-handedly, is a lifelong Democrat. I mean, he cried when he watched speeches of his idol, Hillary Clinton. He sent her love letter emails. And when I called this out, you know, I was attacked. But he's just one of millions in the permanent administrative state who have given us this lockdown, this draconian, authoritarian, fascistic New World Order, which is now running our lives here. And so here's another example of it. What's happened to what they used to say was the greatest city in the world? You know, I love New York. Mm-hmm. And now it's just another hellhole.
Precisely. Now we've got about 2 minutes left, Peter. So,
okay. Well, you know, this has been another time when I come on here that it may strike many viewers and listeners is very negative. Well, we always hold out hope. We will hold out hope till our last breath and even beyond, of course, because we know what's coming after that. We're confident. But, you know, we have another chance this year. It's 11 weeks from today, 77 days until the November 3rd national elections, which we assume will go on as scheduled. Hopefully not by mail-in voting, but we shall see. But it's really up to all of us to do anything we can and everything we can at our position in life, where we are, which means whatever. If you're on social media, if you have contact with real people face-to-face, if you have friends you can share things with, and it means a lot. Sometimes with people on the fence, maybe, especially as they look around and see the destruction and the decay of our way of life, maybe there's an opening then that they will actually consider casting a vote for Donald Trump's reelection, where they might not have done so a few months ago before all this madness set in. So that's my hopeful view. And actually, yesterday, of all places, CNN released a national poll claiming that the race is tightening, and they said they found that Biden is only 4 points ahead of Trump nationally. Now, of course, we don't believe most polls and even CNN, but I thought, well, that's interesting that they're coming out with that, and I was a little bit encouraged that CNN would even say that, so we shall see. But, you know, we've still got 77 days. We have our work cut out for us, and Pray. It was Michelle Obama last night who, in her speech at the convention, said, pray as if your life depends on it. And I said, Michelle, why did you steal my line? But that is absolutely it. You know, prayer works. Pray hard for a proper outcome, and because it's the most important thing we could be praying for right now.
Amen. Peter, thank you as always. Thank you. And I appreciate your time. I could talk to you all day. I'm glad you're coming back one more time this week. And that's at the end of the week.
I'm looking forward to it already, Doug.
You know, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Good job on your mic, by the way. And thanks. I like your tie, too. So
thank you very much, Doug.
All right. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Folks, that was Peter Berichalka, peter.media. That's the website to go to. And, of course, all of the information for Peter will be on HagmanReportLive.com. We'll be right back. Stay where we're at.
Reporting on what the main mainstream media won't, you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report on the Global Star Radio Network.
Exposing the New World Order, you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report on the Global Star Radio Network. Stand by. Doug and Joe will be back shortly.
And welcome back. This is the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. Again, websites include HagmanReportLive.com and HagmanReport.com, two distinctly different websites. And don't forget HagmanStore.com, where you can get some of the best delicious gourmet coffee out there. The proceeds, of course, assist in the fight against child and human sex trafficking. Boots on the ground organizations, such groups as Craig Sawyer, Vets for Child Rescue, preeminent, does extremely good work, as well as Russ Dizdar, Shatter the Darkness as well. So, HagmanStore.com for some of the best coffee you'll ever taste. Three different kinds, three different ways to imbibe, whether it's whole bean, ground, or K-cups. And I'm having some right now this evening. So, all right. Also, real quick, Wisconsin Christian News, WisconsinChristianNews.com. Folks, go there, subscribe, and donate to Wisconsin Christian News. Stan Dale is a good friend of the program, good friend of mine. I have utmost respect for him. He, of course, is the man behind StanDale.com. Him and his wife, Holly, do tremendous work. Holly gets the headlines together. I read them every morning. I'll tell you what, for being a couple of time zones away from me, she's up all, I mean, if I'm up at 5 reading headlines, then she must be up at 3 posting them. It's just, I mean, it's incredible. It's good. So don't forget StanDale.com, and make sure you support them on Patreon as well. Support them any way you can. They're well deserving of our support. The books, Dare to Prepare, that's a requirement, as well as Cosmic Conspiracy, the final edition by Stan Dale. One last thing with that, empshield.com/Hagman, empshield.com/Hagman, and use coupon code Hagman for $50 off. Let me tell you need this, especially with the way the sun's acting up. So I don't want to take any more time away from Stan. Stan, how are you, sir?
Very good, my friend. Very good. We're getting our solar panel installation organized now then. I didn't know how many of your listeners here were in Colorado, because we've had a few of them ring us and say, you know, what solar panel company are you using to put your solar panels in? I talked to you a couple weeks back about the fact that you can get free solar panels if you get to a grid-tied system, and that you didn't have to actually buy all those batteries. But what I did find out when we started getting ours installed was that you need one small battery anyway to fire up all the electronics to get the stuff off of the solar panels in the correct voltage. But other than that, you have a way to get solar power into your house should the grid go down during the daylight hours. Okay. If you can't afford the battery backup system. The trick to it is, if there's a like a combiner box that takes into this box. It takes the feed from the solar panels. It takes a feed from a, like a portable generator, if you got that, if you want it. It takes a feed from the grid. Now, the grid, when the EMP strikes, our EMP shield is going to protect your breaker box, and it's going to disconnect the grid, you know, and shunt it down into the ground where that high voltage goes. But it doesn't physically break the switch there. So I'm having them put a switch between the grid and the combiner box. And it's just a switch that you throw, mechanical switch, to cut the grid off completely, mechanically just cut it off when the EMP pulse has happened and you want to bring in your solar panel without shoving it back into the grid, which is quite dangerous for people working on the grid line if they are. Anyway, these things we've worked out now then, and I've got to get another EMP shield myself, one for the solar panels. So it does work, and we've worked out most of the bugs and how to get it done and give you power when the grid is down, during the daylight hours at least, and 24 hours a day if you can afford some batteries extra to put onto it. Okay, that's enough on solar panels and stuff. Boy, the news. This deal with UAE, the peace treaty, you know, the agreements between Israel and the UAE is going to expand to other Middle East countries. Now, we've been watching Saudi Arabia for 2 or 3 years now then, and the de facto leader of them, which is young Prince bin Salman, he hates, you know, the type of Islam that is in Iran. He is at war in his own mind with Iran. And there have been some shots fired from Iran, from their proxies in Yemen or whatever, into Saudi Arabia near Riyadh. So Saudi Arabia wants to get rid of Iran. So MBS has organized a 34-nation consortium of Arab states, not including Iran. You've even got Pakistan involved in this. We see that Saudi Arabia has to come to the party with this peace treaty between the Arab nations, and it's just falling into place left, right, and center. I think they've been doing a lot of work behind the scenes, the Trump administration and Netanyahu, to get this organized and to meet the demands of all parties concerned. Sadly, what this is going to entail is a division of Israel, a two-state solution, where there will be a Palestinian state. Now, Saudi Arabia is kind of overlording or, you know, watching over the Palestinians. If Saudi Arabia finally agrees to this, that will be the major voting block that will get the peace treaty organized between Israel and the surrounding Arab nations, probably to the exclusion of Iran, of course. But I think Iran and Turkey and Syria are getting together to make life unpleasant for the Israelis. We might even see a war erupt out of this. So the whole action over there tells us that we're at the edge of the tribulation, you know, the 7-year tribulation. Now, coupled with that, on my show images page, I've got images 55 through 57, and actually even 52, about the temple and the red heifer. Now, to have the proper temple worship, the third temple when they build it, they need to have a red heifer, perfect heifer with no white hairs, no gray hairs, just all red. And that's right. You can see where that rabbi is. I think they've got him over there, the red heifer on the left. And when you click on that, it will tell you a lot more about the third temple prospect. What they may not mention in the article, but should, is that there's two ways to build the third temple. You can build it with, you know, stone in some place there and put all the altars and things in stone and wood and brass. Or you can build the temple in the wilderness, which is a tent type thing. And they could erect it against the Wailing Wall and have a wilderness temple basically on the ground there without building out of stone. They can reconstruct it like Moses did. So however they do it, they're about to. And you can see in slide 57. That they're already preparing showbread for the service in the third temple. Now, they must know something we don't, because I haven't seen anything about the third temple being built yet or erected or whatever. You know, this tells you that they think, you know, the rabbis think we're that close to this time. And Lebanon.
What's the shelf life of showbread? I'm just curious.
I don't know. Maybe they're just doing it to practice, and you know. But I wouldn't think they'd leave it out. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that was humorous, but or my attempt at humor. anyway. All right. Yeah, it's certainly something to pay attention to, isn't it?
Yeah, and depending upon how accurate they make the third temple construction, they're going to need the cedars of Lebanon. Now, of course, Beirut has been they had the explosion, and there's angst between Israel and Lebanon. So you can see that they're trying to patch this over rapidly because they need the Lebanese cedars for the third temple. They do it completely to book. So all this just adds up to a very, very tense situation over there. Any tick of the clock, we're going to see that treaty come out for that seven-year peace treaty. And the Palestinians, believe it or not, are starting to lean toward favoring it. Yes.
Wow. Yeah, when you think about this whole thing. But by the way, the Jared Kushner's plan, peace plan, would be the catalyst for the covenant. It's not the covenant, it's the catalyst for the covenant. Is that right, or am I off on that?
You know, it could be a catalyst, and it could be the covenant. Right now, what they're getting is an agreement, like from the UAE, and they'll get a couple more over the Gulf states there. And hopefully then Saudi Arabia and Jordan will fall in line with this. Once they've all made these agreements with Israel independently, I think they'll have to have a joint regional peace treaty. So what you're saying is it may be laying the groundwork and then they have that, or all these things may come together one great signing. But right now, we only have between one and three Gulf states that are making the overture to Israel. So that's not all of them yet. So I guess what you said is probably correct. It's an overture or laying the groundwork for the whole region to sign the agreement. This is what incredible times to live in. I mean, we're seeing prophecy just every tick of the clock.
We are.
And we got to watch this guy, Mohammed bin Salman. He really is. I'm pretty sure in my own mind, he's going to be the Arabic Muslim Antichrist of this age. Now, you know, number one. The false prophet, I don't know who that's going to be, but Mohammed bin Salman is a sly character, and, he's not above shooting people or killing people if they get in his way. And his dad is still alive in the hospital. So now, if Mohammed bin Salman is going to be the prince of the covenant, then his dad has to be alive when the covenant is signed. So, and his dad's in the hospital after having heart surgery and various other things done to him. So we're hanging on a knife edge there. This has to happen fairly quickly.
Wow. One would think, yeah. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Right now. Oh, yeah. Okay. That's the article right there.
All right.
Yeah. Let me go over to slide 54 here. That's a good video with Trump explaining some things about this whole Palestinian issue there on slide 54. And here in this article here too, yeah, that's slide 54, Trump underscores what I'm saying here. He says, for Saudi Arabia, linchpin of Trump's Middle East strategy, recognize Israel as too great a risk. Well, they have problems if they do recognize Israel, and these have to be overcome with what Kushner and President Trump are doing with Netanyahu. But as I've said, Saudi Arabia is the thing to watch in the Middle East. It's the key to the whole drama, you know, for this peace treaty and what's going to happen in a seven-year tribulation.
I just want to point out real quick, I think it's important for people to really understand, grasp the fact that what we saw Obama do with the Arab Spring, was not organic. It was not, I say this often, it was not this quest for freedom, this desire for freedom by the people in the Middle East, Egypt and elsewhere. No, this was planned by, really, it was an intelligence, Five Eyes kind of operation, including and especially the Israeli intelligence, to shift the balance of power in the Middle East. So just so people know that, and I think that that did a lot to advance the minute hand of the clock toward where we're seeing it today. That's kind of my feeling on this.
Kind of jumped the hand up to almost midnight. Yeah.
Yeah. At least advanced, at least hastened it. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to really kind of judge it exactly, but, slide 46, you click on the text and go over to an article in Forbes magazine, and the title of it is Seven Reasons the Israel-UAE Peace is a Great Business Move. And you can see, you just scroll down about halfway down the page, it gives an oil supply for Israel. Right now they've been getting Kurdish oil, which is from Iraq. It goes through Turkey, and of course Turkey's kind of getting very pushy with Israel. But now then you can see all those listed down at the bottom. Just scoot down just a bit more there. And you can see the 7 points why it's so good for UAE and Israel to do business together. I mean, it's financially and tourism wise and oil markets. It's just all right there in front of you. Mm. So this has the signature of President Trump on it. You know, it's an economic negotiation. You know, he's really good at that. And these, I'm sure, were points that they brought up and presented to UAE and, of course, Israel, saying, look, here's why it's so good for you. You'd be silly not to do it, and let's get along and that kind of stuff. It has President Trump's hands on it. It's quite obvious. You know, they're opening up this argument again that the Department of Defense, the Senate is wanting to do this, and the House as well. Open up the investigation on these UFOs to see whether they're man-made, you know, by our enemies, potential enemies, or whether they are really alien devices. Slide 48, you know, they take that Navy UFO image that we've seen several times now then, and it says classified UFO briefings may have left senators disturbed, expert says. You know, they had a program called ATIP, the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, which they allegedly shut down. In 2017, but here we are 3 years later, and there's evidence that they still got it active. This is playing into the scenario that I've been talking about since 1978. The great deception, in my opinion, in the Bible, the great deception is going to be where Satan comes posing as an angel of light. He's going to come posing as friends of Earth, you know, from, say, some other universe or galaxy or planet or whatever. They're going to spin a story that they've come here to help us in our time of crisis. And they're going to make it really interesting because Satan had access to recording devices back when Jesus was on the cross. They'll even be able to show the crucifixion to people and say, look, we were back there then. We saw this, and this is what had to happen. And now we're here to help you, to keep you from blowing yourself apart and destroying the planet and that kind of stuff. This is a great deception. Well, for that to happen, full disclosure, or quotes, full disclosure, has to occur fairly soon before the tribulation starts, or just as it's starting. So watch the news. I mean, mainstream news, you know, Fox and various other news agencies are coming forward with UFO stories, and they're no longer poo-pooing people who see them or report them. They're saying, you know, what are these things? This is serious. And it's a game they're playing. They're being coached from the sidelines by the Illuminati to tell people, look, okay, we're going to have to deal with this. We couldn't tell you before because we just didn't know how to handle the situation. And you don't want to believe what they're going to tell you. This first group of quote-unquote aliens or superhumans that arrive are Satan's people. They are not from Jesus. He's going to come later with that, but certainly he's going to pick up his church at some point in time and deliver them out of the hands of these fake, you know, or satanic aliens, if you wish, that are going to come to Earth. It's going to happen. You can just almost every day see something in the news telling people, look for these UFO things. You know, what are they? We've got to make peace with them. It's there and all that kind of nonsense. It just... I hate to keep harping on it, but that's what I'm saying. We're so close, so close.
That's for sure. Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, yeah. In slide 43, you see a big explosion there And it's not Beirut. It's missiles that were fired on Israel, and Iron Dome intercepted them. And if you go to that article, just down the page a bit, there's a video, I believe. Let me just get...
Wow.
No, not on that one. Oh, hold on just a second. I don't know where I linked it. Okay, there's the picture. Right. Oh, it's in the next one, slide 44. Click on that on the text. And you scroll down on that when the page comes in. It's in black and white and got Hebrew on it. But when you push the go button, you'll see, as I'm doing now, in that little black and white video, to Eric, you'll see little bright lights coming up from the city there in Israel. And it's heading for some missiles. And you don't see the missiles, but the bright lights do. And they just absolutely blow them out of the sky. That's Iron Dome. There they come. Now watch them coming up. And they're about to hit the missiles, which are... up there, there. And that's Iron Dome. Certainly doing its job, isn't it?
Wow.
Yeah, and that's life in Israel these days, I guess. You just, you know, you hope that the dome gets the missiles that are coming for your town, but it is there.
Wow. That's, so just to be clear, those are missiles being intercepted by other missiles, by Israeli missiles, correct?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. With Iron Dome, the United States helped them to do. Now, where to go from here? I'm still in Israel, I guess. Let's look at slide 45 in the text or in the picture, either one. The funny thing about Islam is that when it started back in the time of Muhammad, when was that, about 600 AD or so, something like that. There were prophets and scribes and stuff that were Muslim, you know, and they were writing poems, they were writing books and history books about the time, you know, the greatness of the time of Muhammad. And in there, they made references to the Temple Mount, and they even borrowed the word for it. And now you'll see in this... Al-Aqsa, I don't know how you say it, stands on a place where the Muslim temple never stood, the latter being nothing but a fabrication. This is libel, as they say. Anyway, if you read through the article, you'll see that they give themselves away by naming where the Temple of Solomon was built by David's son, King Solomon. And that alone doesn't prove it, but you'll find that there are other factors on that picture. If you're looking at that picture, yeah. See that gold medallion? That was found buried at the edge of the Temple Mount. And it's from the time period of when Israel is still in charge of the Temple Mount. And it's a Temple Mount medallion. Now, the Muslims say it's a fabrication. It can't be real. But then they can't deny the fact that the names they've given to the site in Arabic are transliterations of the Hebrew for the Temple Mount, where the temple was built. So their own history is telling them that they're silly to say that Israel never occupied that and that there was no Temple of Solomon, because they say it in their own writing. So bit by bit, this is being proved that the Muslims are lying about Israel's claim to the Temple Mount and to Jerusalem, for that matter. Back to Israel. In spite of all that, we're looking at a peace treaty that is going to end up partitioning into a two-state solution, partitioning Israel. Now, Holly and I listened to a number of preachers, evangelists on various things concerning these times. And even this week, one we were listening to was talking about, if you divide Israel, you're going to get divided. So if the United States, which is behind this thing, if you make a peace deal that divides the land, the Holy Land, into two countries, then America's going to get divided. Now, is it going to be divided in civil war? Is it going to be divided, you know, over the election results or non-results? Is it going to be an earthquake, that cuts the country in half or what? It'll be some kind of division that God will punish America for dividing Israel.
Mm.
And
my goodness.
On that, yeah. Well, I've been watching a number of things to try to figure out what it could be. And certainly the election situation is one of the leading proponents for dividing America into, you know, left and right and into civil war. I'm sad to say, but that's where we're at the moment. And then we could have the great earthquake that everybody's talking about in slide 40, if you click on the picture. We're seeing this last week some big quakes over in the Philippines region on obviously the southwest side of the Ring of Fire, the Arc of Fire. You can see that orange, a big orange one. It's about a 6.8, 6.9 on the Richter. Mm-hmm. But look directly across from it at the United States in California. And so if you scoot your picture down and look at the lower part of the picture, it's a close-up of, there you go. Now, here we see, we see a large number of small quakes, which are concerning to the geologists, in the Salton Sea, in the lower part of the image there. And we see the usual number of small quakes around the edge of the San Joaquin Valley, where the San Andreas Fault and parallel faults all go toward the Juan de Fuca area up there. But the number of quakes in the Salton Sea area is concerning, and there is a thought that it may trigger the San Andreas from the lower end, and how far up it will go when it releases, we don't know. But that could be a thing that would divide our country, you know, by breaking, you know, the land there, by doing damage, perhaps allowing flooding from the sea to go into the San Joaquin Valley and hit our crop areas that we depend on a lot from California. But the earthquake situation does look like it's going to be busy. Now, it's not alone in what I've been watching. The slide 41 shows the magnetic field lines of the sun this morning. I haven't got it this evening yet, but I think they're going to release another image shortly. But the magnetic lines earlier today were showing on the left, lower left side, a very bright, like coronal mass ejection potential. But to the right, around facing us, right at the very bottom, is one that has already erupted about 24 hours ago. And it made a shockwave so big that it just spread across half of the sun. I tried to give you the animation of it in a GIF, one of those animated GIFs, but the picture was so big. So, and that's in slide 42. But if you click on that, it goes very, very slow. But about a third of the way into that very short clip, you'll see this like shockwave. I mean, huge circular shockwave come out of that bright spot there and spread across the lower half of the sun. That was a mighty pop, and it wasn't, in my opinion, exactly aimed at us enough to make a halo event and hit the Earth, you know, maybe a glancing blow. But this is telling us the sun, already in this 25th cycle, is becoming dangerously active and unpredictably active in certain areas. We need to watch that. You got earthquakes, you got sun. And, of course, we're into a season of strangeness with the heat hitting the United States for sure.
Record temperature in Death Valley, I mean, 130 degrees. Is that what I heard?
Something like that. And, you know, yeah, life can survive in that, but we're not used to that here.
Well, so, it's really not the heat. It's the humidity. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. No.
Well, we've got fires, too. I mean, like, we've got huge fires here in Colorado that are, you know, sending smoke down the range mixed with the humidity. It's just kind of choking. Smothering type stuff.
I don't know, 130, though, in that case,
Well, people over in the Middle East, when they're like contractors from America, when they go over there into Kuwait and various areas and live in these air-conditioned vans, they say that when they come out of it, it's just like something just engulfs you and just takes your breath away from the heat.
Yeah.
And without air conditioning, you can't survive. Mind you, the Arabs do pretty good with the clothing that they wear. Those robes do kind of act like a ventilating system and, you know, cool you down that way. But 130 degrees, wow. You'd be cooking breakfast.
Yeah, on your knees. Yeah, I mean, I just, so the, when you said the robes kind of act as a ventilation form, I won't even go there. I won't even tell you what I thought. I just, never mind.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Wicked mind. Wicked mind.
Maybe we should all dress in muumuus in the summertime, right? All right.
Yeah. Well, they have proven that. I mean, Lawrence of Arabia even adopted the robes like that when he was there because it was very practical, keep you cool.
Yeah.
It does work. It does work.
Well, yeah. I mean, hey, whatever works at that temperature. Yeah. Let's have it. Yeah. I had a friend that worked over in Saudi Arabia actually for some time. And, yeah, apparently it gets toasty over there.
Yeah.
So
probably explains why they're so hostile all the time. It bakes their brains.
You know, it'd be nice if we could just get a constant, like a 73 degree temperature, 74, 75, whatever your preference might be. You know, with a little breeze and just, again, no such thing, no such luck. It goes from, you know, goes from 95 to, you know, 20 below, and it goes from sunshine to, you know, the snow drifts over your house. So I don't know. Wow.
Yeah, you know, Holly and I talk often about President Trump and how much pressure he is under from all different sides, from people that don't want him to be the president, that want to take him down, from people outside the country that want to take the country apart and destroy us and him. How does a man, any man, deal with such stress like that and make intelligent decisions? I mean, he's doing it, but wow, what a guy.
You know, Victor Davis Hanson, and I'm trying to find it here. He wrote a tremendous article about Donald Trump and about just the very thing you're talking about. And I'm looking for it here and I can't find it. I think the question is, you know, the visceral hatred against President Trump by the people who attempted to take him down, $35 million in the Mueller investigation, Russiagate, Ukraine, all of these BS. Niece coming out, you know, and that can't be a good family situation. Their family dynamic, of course, saying, oh, you know, she's... I mean, you talk about a class act. That was real classy, wasn't it? Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah. Goodness. But anyway, yeah, fighting just, and he survived it. And not only survived it, but he was able to do, like you said, do his job. So, is this what we can expect? Yeah. I'm asking for your speculation. In 77 days from now, when the election takes place, and it's, let's say the American people are told, hey, Donald Trump has won re-election. Are we going to expect another, oh, I don't know, 3.5, 4 years worth of just constant duking it out against President Trump, do you think?
Well, I don't know whether it will last that long, but it will certainly escalate at that point. They're not going to be happy. Yeah. And when you say when the election is, you know, the dust settles, because of the way we're having to count the votes, it might not be until late December before we even know who's won the election.
Right.
And both sides are going to probably cry foul, and this will certainly create a problem. I really think that civil disorder is the next thing on their card, and somehow they will claim that if President Trump wins the election, that he stole it, again, and they'll start intensifying the riots and there'll be gunshots and fire and people will die and force us into martial law. So will it last 3.5 years? That kind of depends on whether the United States is handling a war with China and Russia or in the Middle East. If you look at slide 47, what they're saying there in China about the likelihood that United States and China are going to be at war, it's pretty strong. Let me just read you something from that article. As U.S. aircraft carriers sail the South China Sea, many Chinese military analysts are warning, this is Chinese, that a military confrontation is inevitable. Rabbi Pinchas Winston, an end-of-days expert, notes that, as prophecy states, a military confrontation is inevitable, and China, though not explicitly named in the Bible as the aggressor, has a clear role to play as the nemesis of Israel. And the next paragraph, correspondent Yu Zeyun reported in Think China on a recent scholarly article by Chinese military academic Wang Yongfei. The article warned that right now it looks like very likely that the Trump administration may take an unexpected move and suddenly decide to initiate a military conflict with China in the South China Sea by November. You know, it goes on with, you know, aircraft carrier movements and things and why they think this. But I mean, I don't know whether at this point we would be in a full-scale war with China. I do think from other sources that China and Russia will invade the United States and take it down. And I suppose that might have to happen at the early part of the tribulation period so that the power of the world government stuff goes back over to Europe somewhere. But, I mean, just events are pregnant with fulfilling prophecy right now. They just, it's just incredible to see all this coming out in print.
Very good choice of terms, pregnant, birth pangs and such. Indeed. You know, and I look at this, I look at China. And I think 50 years ago, none of this, you know, we were complaining about things being made in Japan, I think 50 years ago, right? Wasn't that the case? Okay. Now all of our commerce is with China, and thanks to Kissinger and the globalists and everything. I mean, opening the doors to China, the backdoor diplomacy, and I should say communist China, not just China. But yeah, I can see this, man, I could see this blowing up. Which the reason I mention this is because this coronavirus, this Chinese Party coronavirus, I think is part of the larger, picture with China. I'm not even sure. Stan, let me ask you this. Are we even sure, what this coronavirus does, or what many of the mutations do? I mean, you know what I'm saying? No.
They're finding out stuff. They're announcing in the news bit by bit all the time. And, there are different side effects. There are reports on people that have had the virus and recovered, and then they have certain lasting side effects with their lungs or various other parts of their body. That's two or three types of the virus. And as you say, they're mutating.
Right.
It's an incredibly well-designed biological warfare instrument. It's the poor man's atomic bomb. Yeah. You know, I mean,
I don't know. I mean, people – and you talk about America being divided earlier in the program. I mean, masks versus not wearing a mask. I'm not going to wear a mask. You know, I'll opine here and say I would like it better, and I think it would be more constitutional and more lawful if the governors and the people making the decision would say, if you want to wear a mask, we recommend it, but it's up to you. You don't want to wear a mask? Well, you know, hey, it's on you. Too bad for you if you get it, or whatever the case might be. But even dividing this country using this Chinese Party virus, that kind of started a different kind of clock to me. End of days clock. I don't know. Maybe I'm just goofy. I don't know. But
you're not goofy. I mean, we all feel this, that, things are passing rapidly now, you know, quickening, like Art Bell used to say, things are happening very, very rapidly. And, Holly and I, we're looking at each other on Tuesday evenings like this, and we're saying, wasn't it just yesterday that it was Tuesday evening and we were talking with Doug? I mean, you know, they're just happening so quick. I'm serious. It's just like there's so many things happening in our lives, all of us, that, you know, events that are taking our attention. It's like the more events we get, the faster time passes because we're having to deal with all these crises. Just incredible.
And I'm glad you brought that up too, because look, I know people will say, well, you know, the older you get, it's just a perception issue. It's nothing more than a perception issue. I'm not so sure about that. I'm not so sure it's a perception. I'm telling you, I think that time is speeding up. I don't know. I can't explain it. Don't ask me. It's a mystery. I don't know. Eric the Tech can't explain it, but I think, or can you? No. Okay. I'm telling you, I think, speeding up.
Well, you know, when you're out driving on the highway, say out in the country roads, and you're passing fenced in paddocks, and you'll see the fence post going by, zip, zip, mm-hmm. zip. You push on the accelerator, and now it's zip, 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 zip. So more posts are coming past you per blink of the eye, right?
Yes.
Okay, so this gives us the illusion that time is passing quicker because there are more events hitting us. And I think this has a lot to do with our perception. And I know that in the last 2 or 3 weeks, I didn't just grow old all of a sudden, and I've got this old age perception of time passing quicker. There are more events happening of serious nature. And it's those fence posts coming past quicker and quicker and quicker. So, yeah, we measure it by events per blink of the eye or whatever.
Well, I have to say this because my wife's listening. I measure it by my wife, and yours too, with all due respect. You know, my wife is still as beautiful as the day I met her, so time stood still for her, and I'm sure for Holly as well. You'd agree. Just shake your head yes, Dan.
Yes.
Yeah. But anyway.
I agree.
But that's a good mental image you provided there about the fence posts and about those being events. I can see where that does play into it. So, yeah, I can see that.
You know, another factor that's kind of pushing us toward war with China is they owe us over $1 trillion in what's called sovereign debt. And that debt never goes away, and we've never collected it, but they owe that to us. So, you know, by adjusting the books, you know, to cancel that debt and cancel our debt to them and whatever, this could be done. But, of course, China is not too happy about this circumstance, and they're going to resist it. They are resisting it. This may be in addition to the manufacturing and trade problems that are occurring in China because of, you know, our own revised trade agreements with them, or policies, rather. This may force them, the leadership, the Communist Party, to engage the United States militarily because they are left with no option. Their people are unhappy with the Communist leadership at the moment. They've been pushing for a change of the presidency at the moment, which may or may not happen. But leaders of countries, Communist countries particularly, when they're pressured like this by their people, they take military action. It's a good way to get some of the dissidents out in the front line and out of your way. It's a good way to maybe solve the problem, you know, in the long run, and take the heat off yourself as being a bad leader or something. So all these things, and the Chinese and even the Russians wanting to save face, you know, it's a pride thing, may push the button. And I'm not so sure that our defenses have not been compromised from inside by agents, fifth columnists from China and Russia. They've been in our country so long now then that they're embedded in all kinds of places and could impact our defensive mechanisms.
You know, Breitbart just had a story today about an ex-CIA, a retired CIA officer, arrested for selling secrets to China. I think Holly might have put that. I don't know. It might be on your website. But Alexander Yuk Ching Ma. That's his name. I like diversity.
What can I say? Yeah, go on.
Sorry. No, I mean, he was selling U.S. intelligence secrets to Chinese agents. We've had so much of this. You've got Feinstein or Pelosi's drivers. Both Feinstein and Pelosi were connected with Chinese people, spies. Yeah. You've got so much in TikTok, that app, my goodness, you know, and President Trump's coming down on this stuff and saying, no, we can't do this. So anyway, I just think I'll tell you what, it's coming. And you're right. I'm not so sure given the transfer of technology, especially under Bill Clinton, during that administration,
yes.
whether we could survive or fight off the first strike. I don't know.
I know. It. And, of course, if you were in the Obama period of time, we'd have to sit here and wait for him to blow a hole in us before we could retaliate. We couldn't be defensively active before that. But we can now. I mean, I think President Trump will do that. But,
yeah.
Boy.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I don't think there's I'm not sure if there would be anything that would surprise me waking up in the morning or in the middle of the night and seeing, you know, turning on the news. And not too much would surprise me, I don't think, hearing or seeing things, whether it be disclosure, as you mentioned, because I think that, that you're right, that's coming. The Great Deception via disclosure, UFO disclosure, war, earthquakes, you know, reading or hearing, hey, guess what? We just lost, you know, a third of our nation. It's over floating in the Pacific.
Yeah.
You
know. On another issue, I'm sure you've probably seen this. There's a good video from China. Slide 51 has that there. It's an explosion over China. Every night, the Chinese Meteor Monitoring Organization runs an automated camera in Shandong Province, monitoring meteor activity above the coast of the Yellow Sea. On August the 16th, 2 days ago, it caught the brightest fireball in years. Well, of course, that's a meteor coming in and burning up. The night sky, which is normally dark black, turned blue when a space rock exploded, hundreds of times brighter than a full moon. And I went over to spaceweather.com, which, you know, lists the close approach asteroids and things like that. Yeah, look at that. Isn't that brilliant?
Yeah, that would wake you up. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, the one I talked about that I saw back in Australia, in Perth, 1980-some-odd, that came over the house that night, it was like that, except it lasted longer, and it was greener, and it just left trails of green debris behind it, like a Roman candle being shot up into the air. So it was, I certainly felt the presence of the meteor myself. And it, mine lasted a bit longer, broke into four fragments and went over the house into the forest behind me. But anyway, on this, the meteors and things, I went over to spaceweather.com and I looked at the map. Let's see, which one was it here for the 16th? Oh, they've changed it. Of course they did. There was a miss. Okay. On the 16th, they had, you know, the close approach, how many lunar diameters it is away from hitting the Earth. And they had one that said zero. It hit the Earth. And that was the one, of course, that went over China. But now they've taken it off. As I said, they play funny buggers with this, the closeness of these meteors and how they report it, whether it's a nominal or an actual closest approach in the orbit. However, our time's coming down in September, October, let's see, August the 20th. Well, that's not an issue. September the 1st, a third of the way to the sun, but it's going to be a little bit closer than that, which I showed on those reports I did from NASA anyway. All these things, you know, everything's getting active, the sun, the meteors, people, war, famine, disease. These are the critical strains of news that we can expect from reading the book of Revelation. You know, it's happening. It's yes. happening.
You know, somebody had sent me an email who they said, why are you surprised? You talk like you're surprised this stuff is happening. You, of all people, you shouldn't be surprised that this is happening because you speak and you talk about this all the time and you say we should be prepared for this. But when it does happen like this, it kind of, it's, I don't know how to describe it. It's like watching an older person decline in health and ultimately passing away. You know it's coming. You know it's coming. And in fact, you know the day that the chances are, the day you wake up, you know what's coming. So there shouldn't be a surprise there. But it still does. It's still surprising, isn't it?
It is. And I think it's realizing that you are there for the fulfillment of the prophecy, and you're actually seeing it. It's like, I'm actually here. You know, how many people can be totally prepared for that? Really? You know, Holly and I have talked about it for, and you, you know, for like decades.
Yeah.
And Hal Lindsey and people like that, you know, and then it comes together so rapidly, you know, the birth pangs, you know, coming to the birth of the end of this age are coming so close, so rapidly that it surprises us because of the rapidity and one thing after another. Yes, that's true. That's true. That's true. And I'm excited, not overjoyed, but excited.
Of course. Yeah. And I just hope that people, I mean, we know how things play out by the Bible, but I don't know. I hope that people listening to this and watching this, Stan, I think you and I and everyone listening and watching have to understand, I think we were born for this time, to live in this time. We weren't born for the 1800s or 17 or whatever. And I think everyone's got a job to do, in this time in which we live. So, yeah, let's do our jobs, right. I guess.
You know, I'm tempted to start holding, you know, with my patrons, more than one chat session a month, or maybe I'm going to.
We got to talk. Me too. Yes.
Yeah, but maybe we should get together and do it jointly with both our patron teams, because people are, you know, they're anxious. They're like us, and this is an incredible opportunity for us who are believers now to relate current events to prophecy, you know, and point to it to the members of our family and friends that aren't yet saved and say, look, I know it sounds like I'm a, you know, Bible thumper or whatever, but we're at threat and you're at threat of dying, you know, a horrible death fairly soon if we go to war. There is an option. There is a way to avoid that, you know, and it's a great time to witness because the news is providing the witness tools. We need to do that to help them. I mean, people that have resisted in the families, you know, for years and gone their happy way, their attention is now being reached by the COVID, by the economic impacts on them and the threat of nuclear war and UFO reports. That kind. They are now seeing all this flood into their consciousness in the mainstream news. So it makes it easier for you to get their attention and say, look, I'll just put this option before you. Take it or leave it, but this is a way for you to resolve your fear over this and not be afraid.
This is a good time to minister. You're right. This is a very good time to, in my view, to minister to other people, you know, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say something about, you know, I thought that finding the Garden of Eden and proving it was there would be a great witness tool. And I'm sure it has been for a few people that have realized the impact of it, the importance of it. But last week, I think I told you that we were being approached by History Channel to do a short segment on that discovery, which I thought would be really great. So I sent them all the data and stuff I had. And then their legal department sent us a contract for the use of the materials that I had supplied. And it was so binding, so constricting, that they had rights to use it, all of it, not just the 5 or 10 minutes they were going to use, but all of it, anytime they want, anywhere on the planet. In fact, they said in the universe in their contract. And they don't pay you for it. They don't want you to use it either because it might conflict with what they're putting on air. So in essence, if I'd signed that contract, we would have not been able to even show videos of our discovery of the Garden of Eden anymore. So we had to decline the offer.
I sense that happens more often than people think, because I think there's an agenda behind that, more than the legalities. I really believe that there's a lot of information out there when companies like that. I'm not saying this is the case, but when certain companies like that maybe purchase the rights to a book or information, it's to silence. It's to forever silence them. And, I don't know. So your work, by the way, and folks, if you haven't seen it, where can people find that? How can
just
people
go to
get that? Go ahead.
Yeah, go to the YouTube channel. Let's see. for YouTube. It might have to be on my Patreon channel. I think it is, with the Garden of Eden.
Right.
The lecture. But,
yeah. So yeah. Go to Patreon and sign up for Patreon. And by doing so, that'll unlock that video, I guess is what I was getting at.
Yeah. Or, I could put it on a flash drive for them if they want to order it on our website. It was part of a product that we were selling. And I've got some flash drives here I could put onto it. I'll put up a link on our shopping cart so you can see it.
Okay.
Let's see. If you go to our home page and let's see here. Go to the books that you see down there. I don't see it. Let me just get over there to the shopping cart anyway. Where's the shopping cart?
It dinged my SUV just now. Okay, your shopping cart just dinged my SUV, right?
Oh.
Never mind. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, if you go there and onto our shopping cart page, you'll see a category called Standale's DVDs, flash drives, etc. And I put this up the other day. It's the whole Garden of Eden lecture and also on King Solomon and the name of the Antichrist. There's two episodes there. And they are available on flash drive for $35 now. So
great.
You can get that. Okay. Or you can join the Patreon channel. I think it's like $5 and you can see it there and all the other videos that I put up for my patrons.
I'm telling you, it's well worth it. And I think it's a brilliant piece of investigative work that you did. And I, you know, I'm very hard pressed to find anything that would, I've seen comments, people saying, it's not there, it's over here. And I gotta tell you, the totality of evidence, when people really look at that, and folks, if you haven't done so, look at that. I really believe Stan, did all of us a service when he put this together, because it does verify, to me, it authenticates, the Bible, but it also, I mean, it's just a rich investigative piece of journalism. It's more than that. It's
that's what they call it, armchair archaeologists or digital archaeologists or something like that. But, you know, we're going to have to talk about this with our patrons and stuff. I have some chats, and maybe I'll just make some short video clips to put up on our YouTube channel for everyone to see, because I have such an immense view of history revised after finding these places. The good Lord allowed me to discover things that put all the pieces together. Atlantis, what caused the flood? Where was that asteroid? Why? You know, was the earth upside down? Yes. I found the mythical Lemuria. It was a false assumption, but I found what caused that era. I just feel like my brain is flooded with a big picture, really big picture. And I don't know exactly how to just put it all down in one hit. So it's going to be talk about it this day or that day. But I think people really need to know this so they can understand and get a feel for what has happened to us.
Absolutely. And Stan, I think all of your projects kind of interact with one another to give you a wider, like you said, a kind of a bigger picture of everything. And I do believe that all of those projects have, again, the way of authenticating the Bible. Not that the Bible needs authenticating, but it does. And it's kind of interesting how it works out. All right. You've done it again. You've brought us to the end of the show, my friend. So there it is.
Been a good evening, hasn't it?
It has.
A lot of stuff.
It has. I've enjoyed my time. It's kind of relaxed a little bit, no pressure, a lot of information.
And, have you noticed how fast it passed?
It did. Yeah. Man, those fence posts were going by. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you very, very much, right, my friend. Have a great night.
Thank you.
All right.
Lord bless you now.
Lord bless you. All right. Folks, thank you. Certainly, thanks, Stan Dale. And send him an email. Send him an email and say thank you. Heard you on Doug Hagman's show. Heard you on the Hagman Report. Thank you. Eric the Tech, what do you think, brother? Young man.
It's time to go.
It is time to go. I want to say thank you very much from the bottom of my heart for all the people who support this broadcast. Without you, we could not do it. And I have to say that we appreciate your support, financial support, support by prayer, and and purchasing the coffee. Thank you. May God bless each and every one of you. Have a good night.